This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Congress sees an opportunity to end longstanding government-based religious discrimination at FEMA. New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith is here to explain in just a moment. And I know it's California, but even this seems a bit much for the left coast. Possible jail time for using the wrong pronoun. Karen England, executive director at the California-based Capital Resource Institute, has the details later here on Washington Watch. Also, we'll talk with Abraham Hamilton III, the American Family Association's public policy analyst and one of the featured speakers at this weekend's Truth Conference 2017, taking place at my home church outside of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find lots of resources there. And if you happen to miss any of the program, it'll all be archived right there at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me and catch my daily devotion at T. Perkins. All right, three small churches damaged in Hurricane Harvey's unprecedented Texas deluge are jointly suing FEMA, the U.S. government agency for access to public recovery funds. Joining us now is Congressman Chris Smith. He represents the 4th Congressional District of New Jersey. He is the senior member of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, and he's also the author of the Federal Disaster Assistance Nonprofit Fairness Act of 2017 that was introduced earlier this week. Congressman Smith, you've been fighting this battle since Superstorm Sandy devastated churches and synagogues in the Northeast, and now we're at the same juncture again, the government not wanting to help out churches. But you're taking actions to fix that.
Without a doubt, Tony, back in 2013, I authored a bill identical to the one we're talking about today, H.R. 592. It passed the House of Representatives 354-72, overwhelming, it was bipartisan, that would treat houses of worship in the exact same way that we do other nonprofit facilities for reconstruction, for repair and replacement, if necessary, from a natural disaster like Hurricane Sandy or now like Irma and of course, Harvey. The Senate killed it. They refused to bring it up for a vote. President Obama was against it, and I think it was a profoundly discriminatory policy against faith. And we could not get that changed. I've been trying ever since, and now we have a new opportunity, sadly, in the wake of those two terrible events in Texas and Florida, to get this into the reconstruction funding phase. And, you know, there will be a second bill that comes up. Either my language could go in as base text, or we pass it as a freestanding bill, H.R. 592, that's the old one.
H.R. 2405.
Exactly. And it just needs to be done. And our leadership is very favorable to it. And they were back in 2013.
The big difference now is you have a president who is also supportive of it.
That's exactly it. And as you know, what the president, Obama did this repeatedly during his 8 years, he just gets someone on the Senate side to block it. And usually it's the subcommittee chairman. In this case, it was Tom Carper from Delaware. And the bill never even gets a hearing.
This has been a longstanding policy of FEMA. We saw it repeatedly in my home state of Louisiana. In fact, last year when we had the floods that flooded many churches, as well as many homes in our communities, we ran into the same thing. Interestingly enough, I was speaking to some individuals at FEMA today about your bill, and they're certainly receptive to it. I think obviously there's some restrictions on what they can do because some of this is statutory. But I think the president has signaled he favors what you're trying to do. He understands that churches should not be discriminated against. And the other thing about this, Congressman, which I know you and I have talked about and you're very much aware of, these churches often serve as first responders and they're the first ones that help in these natural disasters to take people in for shelter. They provide food in the first you know, 2 to 3 days, which are the most critical. And so there's no reason for the government to treat them any different than they would other nonprofit entities.
You summarized it perfectly. You know, the churches are often the firstest with the mostest, to use that old phrase. They're there on the spot. They're providing food, clothing, shelter, and a venue for first responders to respond. Very often, even in a church or a church facility that has been damaged itself, it becomes a mustering area. And again, it just highlights the discriminatory policy by Obama. And there's nothing, and I say again, nothing in the underlying law, the Stafford Act, that precludes this kind of effort. We are now directing in this legislation that they must do it because of just horrible regulations. And that bias that we have found inside of FEMA, but above all at the White House previous. Thank God that our new president not only recognizes but wants to move very quickly to ensure that they're protected.
Well, Congressman Smith, you also have something else working to your advantage this time around. Not only do you have a White House that the president tweeting out last week that when the suit was filed against FEMA, that he thinks churches should be treated fairly. So you already got him in your corner. But you had a Supreme Court case recently, the Trinity Lutheran case, which also goes on record saying the government can't discriminate against churches when it comes to programs that would be available to other nonprofits.
Tony, I read that decision, and certainly the Chief Justice Roberts, when he said it was odious, and this discriminatory policy on the part of the government, in that case the more local government, the state government, it just underscores that I think we have not only clear sailing, but the Supreme Court will, if the other side, the atheists, bring an action, it'll be quickly dealt with at the highest levels, because there's nothing, absolutely nothing, in separation of church and state that prevents faith communities, especially churches, from getting repair and even replacement as a result of a catastrophe like a hurricane. And you know what the real irony was? The administration, the last one, the Obama people, told some of the churches, oh, you can get a loan from the SBA. Well, if there's any church-state entanglement, why is a loan okay? Of course it's not. And,
that was the response churches in Louisiana got, is that, you're not going to get any help from FEMA. In fact, even though many of these churches, as you pointed out earlier, were damaged themselves, were still being shelters. They were being distribution centers for food and critical supplies, and they were housing relief workers. My church in particular did that.
That's not surprising.
And so they say, well, FEMA can't work with you. We even had difficulty in some cases with Red Cross. But then they said you could get apply for a loan to many of these churches, to which, as you said, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
And then you got huge payments, and FEMA has money that Congress gives to it to do just this. And we're the ones who appropriate the money. We're the lawmakers, not them. Them being FEMA or even the White House. That's why we want to get this statutorily changed so that these last two disasters and any in the future will be covered, the churches will be covered in the synagogues in a way that, ensures that they can get public assistance from FEMA for repair, for reconstruction, or replacement.
Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. My guest, our good friend Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey, has introduced H.R. 2405, Federal Disaster Assistance Nonprofit Fairness Act of 2017. Now, to be clear, this is not putting churches in a special category
or
synagogues. It is simply saying they must be treated as any other nonprofit that would receive assistance from the government in rebuilding in the wake of these natural disasters, correct?
That's exactly right. And Congress mandated that it be done during the Oklahoma City bombing repair in 1995. So there's ample precedent for it, but even if there wasn't, common sense, and as you pointed out, the most recent Supreme Court decision underscores that, the time of discrimination against faith and churches has to end, and FEMA has no right to engage in that discrimination.
Well, I would think it would also be beneficial. The president back in May signed an executive order giving direction to the Department of Justice to issue guidelines for the various federal agencies to ensure that they, in the executive order, said to protect and promote religious freedom. So I would think that if that guidance were put out there, that that would address some of these issues, in and of itself.
It would, and I think this is another area that needs to be included under that executive order. And there also needs to go out from FEMA, and it needs to go out quickly so that churches start applying, because there is a very tight window, and then Congress could always extend that. And if this bill that provides assistance is not done overnight, because we've done a down payment with the first appropriations, but there will be a second that tries to meet all of the needs that's been identified. Usually it's about a month that people have to, and individuals, businesses, have to make applications. So we don't want the time to, time out so they can't make application. But like I said, we could always look to extend that one-month-long deadline. But we want to get the churches to start applying. I mean, they're going to have black mold problems,
right?
Just like we saw in Hurricane Sandy in Louisiana.
I've heard from many of them already. Let me ask you this, Congressman Chris Smith. I was talking to the FEMA representative today regarding this, about the fact that in the Bush administration started to do this on their way out after Katrina. It was a little too late for them to get it in place. But I believe that FEMA, in terms of their emergency response to these natural disasters, should, in their planning, identify and work with houses of worship that are willing to be those first shelters that would be a part of their response. And so that, because before the federal government can mobilize and get in there in those first 72 hours, you've got churches that are already there. And I don't care, people's views of religion. I can guarantee you, I've seen it time and time again, in the midst of these disasters, whether it be man-made or natural, people turn to churches in those times of crisis.
Oh, they sure do. And added to that, at the local level, the township, city, or county level, without a doubt, that's the practice. The local emergency responders immediately turn to the local churches, and they respond robustly. Working around the clock, bringing in volunteers to augment the firemen and the firefighters, I should say, and the police and the other emergency responders. It was extraordinary during Sandy. It's extraordinary everywhere. It is the place where people gather and they meet those compelling humanitarian needs that people in crises face. So, for FEMA to have such, not to have an inclusiveness of that, is another major mistake that needs to be rectified.
It could, because they could increase their effectiveness tremendously by simply bringing in allies in the churches across America. Chris Smith, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for introducing this legislation, and thank you for being a champion for religious freedom and for human rights.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey, a great American, passionately pro-life, a staunch defender of religious freedom, and a very good friend. All right, when we come back, Karen England of the left coast of California joins us. This is really hard to believe. Possible jail time for using the wrong pronoun. I mean, this is even a bit much for California, but it's one signature away from becoming law. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God. But progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more.
In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back. This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And by the way, you'll find something on that website if you're interested in going with us next spring, April 17th, to Israel. There's information there on the website. Joel Rosenberg will be with us. General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, former Ambassador Ken Blackwell. It's going to be a great, great trip. Find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. And now, shocking news from California. A bill is one signature away from becoming law that would criminalize misgendering patients at long-term care facilities by passing Senate Bill 219. This will result in a fine, and if you don't pay the fine, you could do time. Jail time, that is. Joining me now to explain the latest lunacy from California is Karen England. She is the executive director at the California-based Capital Resource Institute. Welcome back to Washington Watch. It seems like a lot's happened since we had you on the program last, Karen.
Well, Tony, thank you for having me. And yes, what happens in California doesn't stay in California, and every day it just gets crazier. Now we have the pronoun police coming after people.
Yeah, and that's why I'm having you on. It's not just for novelty purposes to get people to chuckle at what's happening there on the left coast, but the reality is the left, and I remember this a long time ago when I went to boot camp, and then I was stationed up at Camp Pendleton, and I would go to San Diego on the weekends. I saw people with this, purple hair and different things. It was the punk rock movement, and a couple years later, it was all over America. And, what starts in California kind of moves its way across the country. Explain to our listeners what this bill would do and the fact that it's all it requires now to become law is the governor's signature. What would this do?
Well, SB 219 is a bill that is for long-term care facilities, as you mentioned. Under the guise of being tolerant, they're being very intolerant. They actually... You cannot be denied, let's say your your mother is in a long-term care facility, and she, there is a man who believes he's a woman that wants to be moved to her room. She cannot deny that she wants him in her room. You cannot deny a transgender, a gender nonconforming patient to have access to the restroom that you want to. It even goes so far to say if faculty or the staff call them by, don't call them by their preferred name or pronoun, that's where jail fines and jail come into to play. So as high as $1,000 for willfully or repeatedly failing to use their preferred pronoun.
So, Karen, what this does for, let's say, you know, you have a parent who's in a long-term care facility and you have, you know, you're taking care of them through this facility. This is much like you being concerned about protecting your children that are in a school that could be traumatized or exposed to certain things or even made vulnerable to attacks or something in a restroom. This unwanted advances, this could be the same thing in a nursing home for an elderly patient who, you know, quite frankly, can't take care of themselves.
Oh, absolutely. And it's special privileges because they can request a new room because they want a new roommate, but your mother won't be able to request a new room. That room will be denied. They cannot do it based on your desire to be in with the same biological sex. And this is, again, these are our vulnerable. We're doing it in our schools. You know, we're sending first graders to the principal's office, and now they're going after our vulnerable senior citizens in nursing homes. And it's a direct assault on people of faith and trying to compel not just what we think, not just what we say, but now what we think. You know, now we have to call a boy a girl, or we could be fined or then sent to jail. It's a misdemeanor.
Karen England, this sounds like, I mean, this sounds like this would be a violation of the First Amendment, your free speech, to be able to be punished with a fine and possible jail time for calling a male, a biological male, a he, but just because that person wants to say I'm a she or I'm a goat or whatever, you could be fined and go to jail.
Oh, absolutely. It's a total violation. And that's what we're seeing. And Tony, I know you see this in Washington as well as other states, in Washington, D.C., that there is this attack. And we're having to sue in order to have our constitutional rights respected. And this is a clear violation of the First Amendment and in telling us what we have to believe, think. And again, we're putting seniors at risk. I mean, this is not, there are enough problems in senior care homes with safety. We don't need to add to that.
Now, apparently this bill had some bipartisan support to make its way all the way to the governor's desk.
Unfortunately, it did. There were four Republicans in the assembly. It'll be on the governor's desk in the next 24, 48 hours. But yeah, there were four Republicans who signed off on it. And I don't know what they were thinking, but they were fully aware of the ramifications. This bill has had quite a bit of news. We have been very vocal, as have other groups, and they chose to support this bill. And it's disappointing. It's disappointing that people you put into office that you think are going to stand up for religious freedom and your values go and do something like this that is clearly a violation of the First Amendment.
So, Karen, at this point, are there individuals preparing to file suit against this? Because it's, I mean, I can't imagine the governor not signing this, given who the governor is.
Yes, I believe Governor Brown will happily sign it. And then, yes, all the legal groups, ADF, you know, the national groups have all been made aware of this. They're looking into it. They've weighed in on it. And, you know, hopefully there'll be some sort of an injunction done, because this is a clear, this is so blatant. They don't even try and hide it in this bill. They just go after, you know, you can't say a name.
Amazing. Well, Karen England, thank you for joining us, and thank you for sounding the alarm on what is happening in the state of California to warn the rest of the nation. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, Karen England, to find out more about what she's talking about. I mean, this is real. It's not made up. It's not make-believe like some things. Invisible friends and, you know, changing your gender with the day. I mean, this is real. People being fined for using the wrong pronoun and potentially going to jail. Go to TonyPerkins.com and you can find out more. All right, coming up next, talking about this, you know, truth. How do you stand up for truth in a world that will deny the basic biology of men and women? Abraham Hamilton III with the American Family Association joins us next.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, we're just one day away from the greatly anticipated Truth Conference 2017 happening Friday evening and Saturday at my home church, Greenville Springs Baptist Church, just outside of Baton Rouge. It's defining truth in a world that has gone gray. And I mean, if you were listening to the previous segment where you could get jail time for using the wrong pronoun. I mean, look, what further evidence do you need? With us now is Abraham Hamilton III. He is the American Family Association's public policy analyst. He holds a Juris Doctorate degree from Loyola University in New Orleans from the College of Law. Abe is also a father and Bible teacher. His ministerial focus includes marriage, family, apologetics, biblical worldview training, discipleship, and preaching. And I've known him since he was a teenager. Abraham, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And you are right, since I was a teenager.
and let me say, he is the product, not only of his family, his parents, but let me say this, he's also the product of a pastor who preached the word, lived the word beyond the walls of the church. So it's great to have you on the program.
It is great to be on the program with you.
And looking forward to having you in Baton Rouge coming up tomorrow night. You're going to be here.
I'm excited to be there. I think the description for the conference is apropos for where we are today, defining truth in a world that has gone gray, because it absolutely has gone gray.
So, Abraham, your focus tomorrow, and I know you're going to be talking, you and I are going to actually do a breakout session together on Saturday when it comes to, kind of living out your Christian faith, Christian citizenship. But you've got a message as well to the teens, to the parents, and to the others that will be there tomorrow night.
Yeah, one of the things, the graying of our society, in my estimation, it's coincided with a dearth in discipleship formation. And I think all too often we kind of skip over one of the fundamental building blocks of discipleship formation, and I believe one of the greatest institutions ever created by God, which is the family. It was not only created for companionship, but in fact, I think marriage is the greatest sanctifying tool ever invented, and also the family structure is God's primary tool for discipling children, especially children born within the Christian family, and I think sometimes we lose that and miss that in today's society. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that tomorrow.
I want to, and I'm looking forward to that, but I want to step aside for that, going back to something I mentioned a few moments ago. Apostle Willie Wooten, a really good friend of mine who introduced his church to the legislature and to cultural engagement back when I was in the legislature. What kind of influence can pastors have when it comes to encouraging their people to engage in the broader culture?
Oh, tremendous influence. As you stated, my pastor in New Orleans, Pastor Wooten, it led our entire congregation into engaging the state legislature. I mean, we talked quite regularly that often the legislature is conveyed as if it belongs to someone else, but it actually belongs to the people. You know, there are seats on the outside that allow for people to respond and to discuss various issues with their leaders. And in quite frankly, in my life experiences, as a result of being in his church, being discipled by him, it led to me going to law school, but it also led to lots of wicked legislation being defeated and things that were righteousness espousing being passed. So pastors can truly have a tremendous, tremendous impact if we won't cower in fear at the politically correct mantras of the day and recognize, listen, this is our constitutional republic, and it will be what we make it.
Now, Abraham, did you ever envision yourself having your own radio program on the American Family Association, which is broadcast across the country? You know, growing up, you saw your pastor doing that. You came down to the legislature. I remember seeing you down there and interacting with in fact, I've been to your church and spoken. But did you ever envision yourself at having a national radio program?
No, not in the slightest. And in fact, it's amazing. I never dreamed I would be living anywhere other than New Orleans, Louisiana, quite frankly. But it was as a result of being engaged in the legislative process, I was able to see, wait a minute, this is not what I expected it to be. And I realized that as a citizen that I had an opportunity to participate. And so it has formed and shaped me as an individual, and it absolutely transformed our church.
What are you hoping to – I'm going to focus just on the kids for a moment. We're almost out of time. But what do you hope to deposit with the young people? Now, we'll have all ages there tomorrow and Saturday. But for the young people in particular that were like you back when you first came to the legislature and were exposed to those things, what are you hoping to deposit in their lives?
Well, one thing in particular that I'm hoping to deposit is the fact that – them being change agents. When Ben Franklin comes out of the hallowed hall after shaping what ultimately became our Constitution, he was asked, "What have you wrought, O Benjamin Franklin?" And he yells back, "A republic, if you can keep it." My hope is to convey a biblical worldview and a message that will allow them to be empowered to recognize that they can be a part of preserving and even expanding this glorious republic that we've been inherited as young people in America.
Well, I'm looking forward to being with you and hearing you tomorrow night. Abraham Hamilton, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, and it's great to talk with you again.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to being with you as well.
All right. Folks, there's still room for you. We still can accommodate you. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Follow the links over. That's tomorrow night, 6:30, actually 6, the doors open. We have Jeremy Daly leading worship, lineup of speakers, Dr. Frank Turek, Alex McFarland, Lauren Green from Fox News. So it's going to be a great, great event. Find out more, go to tonyperkins.com. Follow the links over. That's tomorrow night, Greenville Springs Baptist Church, just outside of Baton Rouge. All right, when we come back, there's actually more Washington Watch, and there's your phone calls. So don't go away. We're back after this.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. A senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, let me ask you this question. We were talking earlier. I'm going to go back to our first discussion with Congressman Chris Smith about how FEMA should treat churches, treating them like all other nonprofits, museums, or, you know, whatever, that they should not be excluded just because they're religious. Now, the Supreme Court has weighed in on that. I want to go a little further. And I mentioned this with him, but for those of you especially in areas that are prone to these types of natural disasters, do you think FEMA should include churches, those who want to participate? I'm not talking about that they would mandate it. I'm just talking about for those churches who want to be centers of refuge and relief for their communities, should FEMA proactively include them in their disaster response plans? So the working ahead of time, saying, all right, so this is going to be a church that we work with, and so it'll be a place that we can incorporate into our plans, and, you know, maybe some basic supplies, some MREs, some water that could be used in these natural disasters. What do you think about that? Should FEMA proactively include churches that want to be involved in their disaster response plans? Give me a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And as you're thinking about that, let me just, I was actually having this conversation last week when I was up in New York with my friend Lou Dobbs before I was on his program. We were talking off the air about what Jesus was saying in the end times, that, you know, look, don't be troubled, okay? Don't be troubled. His disciples are saying, well, you know, what are the signs going to be? How do we know that all this is going to be unfolding? And you remember what Jesus said. He said, recorded in the Gospels, look, there'll be rumors, there'll be wars and rumors of wars, there'll be pestilence, there'll be famines, there'll be tribulations, there'll be terror events. There'll be, you know, I mean, the floods, all these things. There'll be all of these things. He said, but don't worry. The end is not yet. He said, this is just the beginning. This is the beginning of the birth pangs. And for those of you who have either gone through or witnessed, I've witnessed, I've not gone through, the process of giving childbirth, when you go into labor, those pains, those pangs that he made reference to, the frequency increases as does the intensity. And I look back, you know, I recall, I mean, it was like Andrew, I think, in 92 that affected Louisiana after it went across the Florida Peninsula and then came into Louisiana. You know, but we just hadn't seen that many until Katrina. And then there was Rita, the Gustav, you had Ike right on the heels of Gustav, and then you had the flooding last year, and then you had, you know, these hurricanes this year, Harvey and Irma. I believe that the frequency is increasing and the intensity clearly is intensifying. And folks, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't believe it's global warming. But given all of that as the backdrop, should the church not be ready? And I'll tell you, our church has now included this in our missions focus. And we sent over, we're focusing on a couple of things. Food, we cook good. We got a great cook team. We went to Houston, Steve Riggle's church, our good friend there at Grace, and we cooked over there. We also sent 5-gallon buckets filled with cleaning supplies, which we found very, very helpful in the wake of the flood in Baton Rouge. So we're incorporating this now in the way we do business as a church. And more churches are because of the frequency and the intensity. So would it not be a good idea for FEMA to find those churches who want to be involved? Again, I emphasize want to be, and include them in their disaster response. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Tennessee where Carrie is on the line. Carrie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. This is Sherry, and our church utilizes through the Red Cross. We have a big gym where we could open it up the area for cots. We have showers. We have a full-size kitchen. So we have 4 showers, bathrooms, and a great big gym that they will utilize. The American Red Cross utilizes a lot of the churches around the area, and they train us.
Sherry, let me ask you, what is in particular, is that from like the tornadoes, or what is it that your church normally responds to?
When we have the tornadoes, when we have ice storms, and people are without power for a long period of time because of ice storms.
Mm-hmm. So, how long has your church been doing that?
I've been there since 12, so it's been before that.
So wow, that's great to hear.
And I think FEMA should utilize them.
Yeah. And I know that even in the wake of the floods here, that and I know it's happening in Houston, it happens all over, but I know we had a lot of churches from Tennessee that sent help down to this part of the country, to the Gulf Coast region. I bet there's more churches than people, and I know there are. There are a lot of churches now that are involved in this, and I just think it's a great resource for the federal government. Sherry, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you listening and sharing that. Let's go to Mississippi, where Jose is on the line. Jose, welcome to Washington Watch.
Wanted to agree that FEMA should see the churches as a great resource. You know, especially the churches that are right in the area, in the community, where, you know, they're preparing for a disaster. You know, the people are more than willing. It's volunteer work. They rally around. They know the neighborhood. They know the neighbors. And I think it's greatly appreciated. You know, many of our, like my church here in Mississippi, we've been doing this for over 10 years. And you know, we have a group right now down there in Harvey in Texas, mm-hmm. and in Florida, and we help in our own area. We've been hit with several tornadoes, and people just love to volunteer, you know. And we have the facilities. God has blessed us with the means, so I think it's great, and it'll be wise for the government to see that churches and you know, facilities like churches are a great asset and a great contribution. You know, that, and they help us and I think it's important that, you know, that government understand they don't have to do everything, you know. They got great resources in the community, in the people.
And people, and like you said, Jose, people who...
churches are better managers, yeah.
Right, and as you said, people who want to volunteer, who want to help, and that really is an economic driver for our country. I think I talked about this earlier in the week, but when every dollar, and this is based on research, but for every dollar that is spent... or given through charity, there's a multiplier effect. It's 3.75. So every dollar that's given it for charitable purposes turns into $3.75 in terms of economic impact. And so it's – and, of course, the volunteer aspect, we logged tens of thousands of hours in the Louisiana area after those floods of people who just came from all over to help out. Now – I do think, you know, there are some aspects of this you got to be careful. We're not looking, and I'm not talking about the government hiring churches or the government just giving money to the churches. I'm talking about the churches who are already doing this, who are geared up for this, being included in the planning and the preparation. Because whether it's – I remember seeing this distinctly – when you in like West Virginia, where you have some of these tragic coal mining events, have you ever noticed when you see the families gathering, and you know they're getting these press reports and they're tracking this, and sometimes for days, you ever notice where they're at? Almost every time, they're gathered in a church. Look, it's instinctive still in this country, despite the fact that the left is doing its best to try to remove and alter the DNA of this country. This is deeply, deeply woven into the fabric of America. All right, we're going to keep going here. Let's go to Iowa, where Jesse is on the line. Jesse, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
My comment is that I think in theory it would be great if FEMA would use the churches as part of their plan. However, I would kind of be cautious just because it seems like whenever the government gets a grip on something or provides funding for it, would they have the ability to tell the church what to do at any point in time or be able to, you know, guide them in ways they don't want to go.
Right. No, I agree. I agree. That's why I was never really a big proponent or fan of the quote-unquote faith-based initiative where the church was given money for certain things. Now, I think the church, you know, churches that have like drug intervention programs and stuff like that that are clinical and as well as having the faith component, they should be able to compete for those government contracts or grants like anybody else. However, I think it needs to be very clear that a faith-based organization – in fact, this was part of my conversation today with FEMA when I was talking with them – is that they should in no way restrict churches that – let's say, for instance, and I speak from experience – a church automatically has to serve, and they often do, Joel Osteen was criticized because his doors weren't open immediately. Churches generally aren't set up to house people. Now, I think he was unjustly criticized. But we experienced this back after Katrina where the Red Cross and FEMA would not allow churches to have, for instance, cots for people to sleep on, even though there was like 100 people in this one particular church, because they were not they were a church. And so that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. Just look, if you've got people turning to churches in these times of need, they could be included in the planning. I'm not talking about, government giving money directly to these churches, but simply recognizing their contribution and using it. Another good example, and I think I may have mentioned this last week, but even from my church, there were some folks that were a part of the Cajun Navy that went to Houston. And to their credit, the Coast Guard didn't turn them away. They said, okay, all right, guys, come with us. We're going to station you here, and we'll send you out to where. And so they were dispatching them to where there was a need. And it was very, very successful. And that's what I'm talking about, a partnership, knowing that there's volunteers, there's people who want to do this, who want to serve their and help their neighbor. The government should take them in and increase the effectiveness of the outreach because, as someone said a moment ago, these things are bigger than what the government can handle. And we're seeing increasingly with the size of these storms and natural disasters, it cannot be done with without everybody pitching in. All right, I'm going to try to work another call here. Let's go to Bill in Ohio. Bill, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for all you do and what you continue to do.
Thank you.
I was very involved with the Red Cross in the area where I live, and it's been a couple of years since we've been out of it, and we got out of it for reasons of seeing changes within the Red Cross and not positive changes, but I think it would be very positive for the FEMA to get involved with these churches and basically eliminate the middleman and have a direct relationship with these churches. Cause like your previous callers have said, the churches are open to anybody. I mean, there's not any place in the world that you're not going to be turned away as the church. And, I mean, if it's a true Christian church, you're welcome
right
there.
And right,
you've got a tremendous amount of people and great people that are willing to donate their time and to volunteer, but what we got to be careful of is that the federal government, like even what the Red Cross did, it sometimes they put too many restrictions on. You can't do this, you can't do that. By golly, if you got an emergency and it's a disaster, sometimes you got to, you know, give a little leeway on what those regulations are.
Without question. And Bill, I think I've seen, and that's why I can't support the Red Cross. I've seen it too many times, even in shelters that they've had where they prohibit people from carrying their Bibles, sharing the gospel. And then when they're called out on it, they say, well, that was a mistake. It was a misunderstanding. And in fact, it's not. There's
right,
this growing hostility toward faith, and we cannot tolerate that. You know, well, look, this is why I work with Samaritan's Purse. Cannot sing the praises loud enough of Samaritan's Purse in Franklin because, look, he says this. He said this on the program. I guess it was last week he was on. He said, we serve in Jesus' name. That's why we do this. We don't do it to give glory to man. We do it to give glory to God. And that always has to be at the forefront of the mission of the church. Yes, we'll partner with the government, but we're doing it in the name of Jesus, and that's the only way we can do it. And so we're going to pray with people when they come through the door if they want someone to pray with them. We're going to tell them about the love of Jesus and that he's going to walk with them through this. So, you know, we're not going to back away from our primary mission, but we're going to love people and we're going to serve people in our communities. And I think government would be well served to partner with those churches. Bill, thanks so much for the call. Folks, sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls. Out of time for today, but guess what? I'll be back tomorrow, Lord willing. And we're going to be doing a live broadcast with some of the speakers for the Truth Conference at Greenville Springs Baptist Church. So that's coming up tomorrow. So be sure and tune in. I'll be back. I hope you will as well. Until then, remember what the Apostle Paul says. You've done everything you can do, and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand. You got it. Keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.